Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we're really zeroing in on health behaviors, you know, the stuff we do every day that adds up to impact our health.
Exactly. We'll be looking closely at Lecture 4 and its slides and pulling in some key ideas from Chapter 4 as well. Mm-hmm. It's all about the psychology behind why we do what we do health-wise.
Right. And the goal here for you listening in is to unpack that, to understand those habits, maybe get some aha moments, and figure out how we can all, you know, nudge ourselves towards healthier choices without it feeling like this massive, overwhelming task.
Yeah, practical insights are key. So let's maybe start with the big picture. Lecture 4 really gets into how our understanding of health threats has shifted.
Mm-hmm. It used to be all about infectious diseases, but now it's different.
It really is. Mm-hmm. Lecture 4 points out this dramatic increase in preventable diseases being the top causes of death. Things like heart disease, some cancers, accidents.
Things heavily influenced by our behaviors, basically, our choices.
Precisely. It puts those daily habits, the small things, right under the microscope. And Lecture 4 also mentions how these choices don't just matter now.
Oh, yeah, the long-term stuff. What we do today echoes into our older years, right?
Definitely. It really shapes our health trajectory down the line. It's quite sobering when you think about it like that.
It is. So if our behaviors are so important, what drives them? Chapter 4 gives us some clues there, doesn't it? It talks about psychological factors.
It does. Chapter 4 digs into things like personality, how much social support we have, even how we perceive and handle stress. All these things can nudge our health behaviors one way or another.
Okay, let's pick one of those. Personality. Chapter 4 mentioned hardiness. What is that exactly?
Right. Hardiness. Mm-hmm. It's conceptualized as having three parts. Commitment, like being involved in life. Mm-hmm. Control, feeling like you can influence outcomes, and seeing change as a challenge, not just a threat.
Huh. So people high in hardiness, they might be, what, better at sticking to things, like exercise.
That's the idea from Chapter 4, yeah. Mm. They might see a tough workout plan not as something impossible, but as a challenge to overcome. They have that grit, that internal sense of control and commitment that helps them persevere.
That makes a lot of sense, like a kind of mental toughness for health.
Yeah.
Chapter 4 also brings up social support. You know, having friends, family,
mm-hmm.
It seems obvious it helps mentally, but physically too.
Absolutely. Chapter 4 really highlights this. Social support can act as a buffer against stress. When you feel like people have your back, you cope better.
And that affects your body.
Yeah, it can positively influence things like your immune function, maybe even blood pressure. It dampens the physical hit that stress can deliver. Lecture 4 also kind of touched on this indirectly, talking about how our social circles shape behavior.
So the people around us are important for more than just, you know, feeling good. They can actually influence our physical health and our choices.
Without a doubt.
Okay, so shifting gears a bit. Lecture 4 got specific about certain behaviors. Sun tanning was one.
Yes. Lecture 4 was pretty clear about the risks there. The link between UV radiation from intentional tanning and skin damage, skin cancer, it's well established.
But people still do it. Why? Is that where psychology comes in again? Like Chapter 4's ideas about risk perception?
Could be. It might involve underestimating personal risk that it won't happen to me, feeling we talked about. Or maybe social factors like perceived attractiveness associated with a tan play a role. It's complex.
Definitely complex. Another one Lecture 4 covered was exercise, the thing we all know we should do more of.
Right. And Lecture 4 mentioned not just the physical benefits, which we all hear about, but the psychological ones too, that runner's high, the mood boost.
Yeah, that feeling afterwards. Sometimes that's almost a better motivator than thinking about weight loss or heart health, isn't it?
It could be a really powerful driver, as Lecture 4 suggests. If exercise becomes associated with feeling good mentally, reducing stress, which Chapter 4 links strongly to health outcomes, mm-hmm. then you're more likely to make it a regular thing.
Framing matters, not just a chore, but a mood enhancer. Lecture 4 also brought up some pretty stark numbers about obesity rates, specifically in Canada. It's a big challenge.
It is a major public health concern, yeah. And Lecture 4 made an interesting point related to that about motivation.
Oh, what was that?
Well, the idea that just being told by a doctor you need to lose weight isn't nearly as effective as finding your own reason,
mm-hmm.
that internal drive, that self-motivation.
So feeling like you're doing it for yourself, not because someone nagged you.
Precisely, that sense of personal agency or control. It ties back into Chapter 4's discussion of self-efficacy, believing you can actually make the change. If you believe you can do it, and you want to do it for your own reasons, you're much more likely to succeed.
That resonates. You need to own the decision. Okay, so lecture four didn't just focus on diet and exercise, right? It also mentioned preventable injuries.
Yes, that was an important point. Things like accidents at home, workplace accidents, car crashes. Lecture four highlighted these as a huge cause of, well, preventable death and disability.
So behaviors like wearing a seatbelt, not texting while driving, maybe putting that non-slip mat in the shower, those are health behaviors too.
Absolutely. They fall under that umbrella. It broadens the picture, doesn't it?
All right.
Health isn't just about disease prevention in the traditional sense. It's also about safety and avoiding injury through conscious choices.
It really does broaden the picture. And again, maybe Chapter 4's ideas about risk perception or even stress influencing decision making could play a role in why people sometimes take those risks.
It's all interconnected. Our psychological state, our personality traits like maybe impulsivity or conversely conscientiousness, our social environment, the stress we're under. It all feeds into the choices we make, big and small, that affect our health and safety.
So Lecture 4 laid out some specific behaviors and risks, and Chapter 4 gives us some of the psychological tools or frameworks to understand why people engage in or avoid those behaviors.
That's a good way to put it. Chapter 4 also talks about other psychosocial factors, like optimism, how having a generally positive outlook seems linked to better health.
Really? Optimism? How does that work?
Well, Chapter 4 suggests a few pathways. Optimists might cope with stress better. They might be more proactive about their health-seeking information, sticking to treatments, and maybe they're even direct physiological links, perhaps related to immune function or cardiovascular responses.
Interesting. So mindset matters. What about the opposite? Chapter 4 mentioned type A behavior.
Ah, yes. Type A, that pattern of being super competitive, always rushed, easily angered, or hostile. Chapter 4 links that pattern, especially the hostility component, to increased stress and notably a higher risk for heart disease.
Wow. So personality can be protective, like hardiness or optimism, or it can potentially be a risk factor, like with type A hostility.
That seems to be the case, according to the research summarized in Chapter 4. And it also emphasizes how these factors often interact with stress. Stress itself has direct physiological impacts.
Right. The hormones, cortisol, adrenaline.
Exactly. Chapter 4 details how chronic stress keeps those systems activated, leading to things like wear and tear on the cardiovascular system, potential inflammation, and even suppression of the immune system over time.
Which makes you more vulnerable to getting sick.
Precisely. And that's where things like social support, coping strategies, and even just talking about stressful events, what Chapter 4 calls disclosure, can help buffer those negative effects.
Disclosure? Just talking about stuff helps your immune system.
There's evidence for it. Mentioned in Chapter 4, expressing emotions, writing about stressful experiences, it seems to have a positive effect, possibly by reducing the physiological burden of keeping it all bottled up.
Huh. That's fascinating. So it's not just about what happens to us, but how we perceive it, how we cope, who we have around us.
And the behaviors we choose in response. Chapter 4 points out that healthy behaviors themselves, good diet, regular exercise, sufficient sleep, can also act as stress buffers. They help our bodies manage the physiological load of stress more effectively.
It all loops back, doesn't it? Your psychology affects your behavior affects your physiology. Your physiology is affected by stress, which is moderated by your psychology and social support.
It's a very dynamic interplay. That's why the biopsychosocial model is so central now. You can't really isolate the biological from the psychological or the social when you're talking about health and illness. Lecture 4 and Chapter 4 both really underscore that interconnectedness.
Okay, so we understand the why a bit better now, the psychological influences. What about changing behavior? Lecture 4 touched on health communication.
Yes, how messages are framed.
Yeah.
Like, emphasizing the benefits of doing something healthy versus the risks of not doing it. Gain framing versus loss framing.
And one works better than the other.
It often depends on the behavior, according to Lecture 4 and other research. Gain frame messages, exercise boosts your mood, often seem better for promoting prevention behaviors. Loss frame messages, smoking causes cancer. Their effectiveness is maybe a bit more complex. Sometimes they can backfire if they just induce fear without giving people a sense of control.
Right. You don't want people to just shut down because they feel overwhelmed or helpless, which links back to that idea of personal control and self-efficacy from Chapter 4.
Exactly. Effective health promotion needs to not only inform, but also empower. It needs to make people feel capable of making the change.
It's a lot to take in, but it paints a much richer picture of health than just, you know, eat your vegetables, don't smoke.
It really does. Understanding the psychological underpinnings is crucial if we want to effectively support ourselves and others in leading healthier lives.
So as we wrap up this dive, drawing mainly on Lecture 4 and Chapter 4, the big takeaway seems to be just how much our internal world, our thoughts, feelings, beliefs, personality, and our social world interact with our biology to shape our health journey.
Mm-hmm. It's about that whole person in their whole environment.
So here's something for you to think about. Consider one health behavior that Lecture 4 or Chapter 4 brought to mind for you. Maybe it's exercise, maybe it's how you handle stress, maybe it's sunscreen use. Thinking about things like hardiness, social support, optimism, or even just how messages are framed, how might those factors be influencing your approach to that specific behavior right now? No need for big changes, just consider the why behind your what. Until next time, keep exploring.